ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Oh my good. Welcome back. We're continuing our study of chapter 18, and we'll begin our recitation today with verse 51. Repeat after me, please. Buddhya Vishuddhaya Yukto Buddhya Vishuddha Dhrityatmanam Niyamyacha Dhrityatmanam Shabdadin Vishayans Tyaktva Shabdadin Vishaya Ragadveshavyudasyacha Ragadveshavya Viviktasevi Laghvashi Viviktasevi Yatavakaya Manasaha Yatavakaya Dhyana Yoga Paro Nityam Dhyana Yoga Paro Vairagyam Samupashritaha Vairagyam Samupashritaha Ahankaram balam darpam, ahankaram balam, kamam krodham parigraham, kamam krodham, vimuchya nirmama shanto, vimuchya nirmama, brahma bhuyaya kalpate, brahma bhuyaya, brahma bhutah prasannatma, brahma bhutah prasannatma, Na shochati na kangshati, na shochati na samah sarvet shubhuteshu, samah sarvesh mad bhaktim labhate param, mad bhaktim labhate bhaktya maham abhijanati, bhaktya maham abhijanati Yavan yashchasmi tatvatah, yavan yashchasmi tat, tato mam tatvato gnyatva, tato mam tatvak, vishate taranantaram, vishate taranantaram, sarva karmanyapi sada, sarva karmanyapi Kurvano madhyapashrayaha, kurvano mad prasaradavapnoti, mad prasarad shashvatam paramavyayam, shashvatam param chetasa sarva karmani, chetasa sarva mai sanyasya matparaha, mai sanyasya man Buddhi hogamu pashritya, buddhi hogamu Matchittah satatam bhava, matchittah satatam Matchittah sarva durgani, matchittah sarva Mat prasadatharishyasi, mat prasadathare Atha chetvamahankaran, atha chetvamahankaran Nashroshyasi vinangshasi, nashroshyasi vinangshasi, yarahankaram ashritya, yarahankaram. Nayotsyayati manyase, nayotsyayati mityaisha vyavasayaste, mityaisha vyavasaya. Prakritistvam niyokshati, prakritistvam niyokshati. Svabhava jena kaunteya, svabhava jena kaunteya, nibaddha svena karmana, nibaddha svena kartum nechasi anmohat, kartum nechasi karishyasya vashohitata, karishyasya vashositata. Very good. We finished verse 54, but I want to return to it to introduce today's class. Verse 54 introduces the next subject, which was the nature of an enlightened person. Prior subject, as you remember, was what are the qualifications of an adhikari? An adhikari is one who is prepared, a prepared student, a student who is capable of using these teachings for the sake of gaining enlightenment. Excuse me. So having discussed in several verses, in three verses, the qualifications of that qualified student, then next topic comes, if you are qualified, how did in the last class? I said, if you are a qualified student and you have access to the scriptures and a teacher, then what? It's like if you have a match, we have to be very careful. If you have a match and a bunch of dry twigs and dry paper, and you bring together the match and the dry twigs and paper, what happens? It can't be otherwise. The fire takes place. What is the problem? Match, wet twigs, wet paper. So the wet twigs and wet paper represent the lack of adhikaritvam, the lack of preparedness on the part of the students. But the beauty of this metaphor, this is not our topic, but just as long as we have this metaphor going, you take that match. The match represents this jnanagni, the spiritual fire. So we just said that jnanagni, that spiritual fire, will not make a student enlightened who's not prepared. Useless. Not entirely, but that's the leading statement. You may think useless. What is the point of that match with the wet twigs? Useless. So then the argument goes, which I'm going to refute in just a moment, then the argument goes, what is the use of these Vedantic teachings for a student who is not prepared? The argument goes, useless. I think not. And here's why. You take that burning match and you hold it underneath some wet twigs. The twigs don't ignite, but they do get a little bit drier. Then you light another match and you hold it underneath those same wet twigs. Still, the wet twigs don't ignite, but they get yet more dried. Match after match, the twigs gradually get dried until finally they are adequately dried, and with the very next match, poof. And that's what goes on in Vedanta. Even a student who lacks some of these qualifications we discussed in a prior class, even those students are blessed by these teachings, even if they don't emerge from class enlightened, every class, every exposure to these teachings makes a student more prepared, more prepared, more prepared, until finally all it takes is one more match. One more match means what? One more class. Maybe today is the class. You don't know. Right? How do you know? Maybe this is it. Maybe you've got sufficiently dried out, as it were, and now we don't know. Anyway. So, in the end of the last class, we had an interesting discussion about this verse, talking about the enlightened person, who is described as brahma-bhutaha prasannatma na shochati na kankshati. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu has equanimity towards all, na shochati, na kankshati, doesn't grieve, doesn't desire. Brahma bhutaha, non-separate from Brahman, prasannatma, is blessed by the fullness of oneself. And the last line was the most interesting one. The enlightened person being described here, the last line says, mad bhaktim labhate param. Param bhakti. Labhate. The enlightened person labhate gains what? Not just bhakti, param bhaktim, supreme bhakti, the highest form of bhakti. And then at the end of the last class, we return to chapter, was it 7 or 9? I forget already. And it's chapter 7, verse 16, Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam, where Sri Krishna says that there are four kinds of bhaktas, four kinds of devotees. The lowest of the four was the Arta, who only prays in times of distress. The next was the Artarti, the one who invokes Bhagavan's blessings for help in dealing with worldly issues. And the third of them was the Jignasu, the one, the devotee who truly wants to know who and what is Ishvara. And these three devotees, these three bhaktas, are described by Sri Krishna. And as I said, very important point, Sri Krishna is not criticizing the Arta and the Artarti. Be very clear about that. The one who only prays in times of distress, and one who prays, hey Ishvara, please give me this, please give me that. These devotees are being praised in this verse, not criticized, because at least they're praying. Definitely they are praiseworthy. But who is the most praiseworthy? Well, the fourth of the four bhaktas is the jnani, the one who knows Ishvara. The jnani, the enlightened person, is the one who's praised as the best of bhaktas. Why? The jnani, really speaking, is the only one who truly knows who he or she is praying to. And just to reflect on that, we'll see this also in the very next verse, but we made this point at the end of the last class. If somebody doesn't exactly know who is Ishvara, because that person's not quite enlightened, and they pray, are they praying to Ishvara as Ishvara truly is, or are they praying to Ishvara as they understand? Right? They're praying according to their understanding. Their understanding is limited. Their understanding is at least partially incorrect. Based on that partial knowledge, based on that incomplete knowledge of Ishvara, they pray. Again, this is not being criticized, right? That's being praised. Absolutely being praised. But what Sri Krishna says here, and in the next verse that we'll see in just a moment, what Sri Krishna says is, the one who truly knows me, Sri Krishna says, that one is the best of bhaktas, because that one that one knows me, that one prays to me, that one is devoted to me as I truly am, which is exactly what Sri Krishna says in verse 55. Bhaktya mama bijanati, bhaktya mama bijanati, yavan yashchasmi tattvatah, yavan yashchasmi tato mam tattvato jnatva, tato mam tattvato vishate taranantaram, vishate taranam. Bhaktya, by means of devotion, bhakti, mam abhijanati, abhijanati, one who knows whom? Mam, Sri Krishna says in the first person, one who knows me. One who knows me, how? Yavan, just as, yahacha asmi, just as I am. Yavan, yaha asmi, just as I am, tatvataha, in reality. The one who, abhijanati, the one who knows me, not the one who knows me in general, but the one who knows me as I truly am. Now, just to reflect on this for just a moment, everyone knows Ishvara. You know, we know that there's a God who created the world. There's a God who sustains the world. There's a God unto whom the world returns. And we know it's one and the same God, that Ishvara. So then, where's the lack of knowledge? Ishvara is more than that. In fact, that knowledge of Ishvara is considered incomplete and inadequate. Why is that knowledge? Ishvara as creator, sustainer, destroyer, srishti karta, stiti karta, laya karta. knowledge of Ishvara in that way is limited, inadequate, and incomplete. Why? Well, we say Ishvara is everything. And then when we worship Ishvara as creator, sustainer, destroyer, are you the creator? No. Are you the sustainer? No. Are you the destroyer? No. So then when we worship Ishvara as creator, sustainer, destroyer, it necessarily excludes ourselves. By all means, it excludes ourselves. Why? I'm the bhakta. I'm praying to Ishvara. I am separate. Ishvara is separate. World is separate. Everything is separate. This is the incomplete knowledge. The one who knows Ishvara completely is one who knows oneself to be utterly non-separate from that Ishvara. The one who knows Ishvara not merely as creator, sustainer, destroyer, not merely as karma phala data, giver of the fruits of action, but the one who can look within and say, yes, the truth of who I am is the truth of who is Ishvara. This is the vision of an enlightened person. An enlightened person is one who sees Ishvara everywhere. You know the old story. And the old story is the disciple comes to the guru. Oh, guru, have you seen Ishvara? And guru says, yes. Disciple says, really? Where? When? Guru says, here, now. Disciple's a little confused because guru is looking at the disciple. And the guru says, I see Ishvara here now. Well, he's looking at the disciple. So the enlightened person is one who sees Ishvara everywhere. What happens when that guru looks in a mirror? Then suddenly no Ishvara? Ishvara is everywhere else except in the mirror, except in oneself? So an enlightened person sees all of this is Ishvara. What is Ishvara, and then necessarily I am non-separate from that Ishvara. This is that highest form of bhakti, because this is understanding Ishvara tattvataha truly, fully, completely. Sri Krishna says, yavan yaha cha asmi tattvataha, one who knows me as I truly am, leaving nothing out. Leaving nothing out means understanding Ishvara is present in everything, and also that I am non-separate from that Ishvara. That is a complete knowledge. This is, he says, bhaktya. Through bhakti, one knows Ishvara as Ishvara truly is. Through what kind of bhakti? We just saw four kinds. This first begins bhaktya, by means of bhakti. By means of artha bhakti, when you only pray in times of distress. By means of the artartis bhakti, the one who is praying for particular worldly things. By means of the jignyasu's bhakti, no. Bhaktya here, by means of bhakti, means through this parama bhakti. Parama bhakti is a word used, if I remember right, in the Narada Bhakti Sutra to describe this ultimate form of bhakti, the devotion of an enlightened person, a devotion of an enlightened person who sees Ishvara in everything and further sees oneself as being non-separate from that Ishvara. That's what Sri Krishna means here when he says, one who knows me as I truly am, tataha, therefore, mam tattvataha jnatva, jnatva, having known, mam, me, tattvataha, as I truly am, uses almost the same language. Therefore, one who knows me as I truly am, vishate, that person enters, mam, enters me, taranantaram, immediately. That person, knowing me, that person enters me. Now, the interesting language, and Shankaracharya in his commentary picks up on this, because it starts to sound like a two-step process. First you know Ishvara, and then you enter into Ishvara. I hope that doesn't sound right to you. There's no two-step process. You can't know Ishvara and then enter into Ishvara. So first you know Ishvara, you become enlightened. In fact, you've read things like that. When you become enlightened, thereafter you merge into Ishvara. You've read something like that or heard something like that. It's a common kind of expression. First you get enlightened, then you merge into Ishvara, into that reality. And Shankara points out how ridiculous that is, because when you discover Ishvara, you discover that you've always been non-separate from that Ishvara. You don't become non-separate from that Ishvara. You've always been non-separate. To gain knowledge, to gain spiritual wisdom, is to discover you have always been non-separate from that Ishvara. Or to put it in simpler terms, we speak of the inner divinity. Is it that one day that inner divinity comes and gets inside of you? Or is it that your true nature has always been divine, but perhaps that inner divinity hasn't been fully recognized, hasn't been properly known? This is what Vedanta teaches. Vedanta teaches that you are that divinity, whether you know it or not. You already are non-separate from that Ishvara. And the purpose of these teachings, especially right here, is to show us that the goal then is to discover our non-separateness from that Ishvara. So therefore, there's no two-step process. It's not tataha, mam tatvataha jnatva vishate taranantaram. Knowing me, and I'll paraphrase this, one who has discovered the truth of Ishvara discovers oneself to have always been non-separate from that Ishvara. That's what's being taught here. All right. Then, the vision of reality, the knowledge expressed in this verse, really is the highest knowledge of Vedanta, to discover that the Ishvara, who is manifest as the entire universe, the Ishvara, who is the reality because of which the universe exists, to discover your non-separation from that Ishvara. This is the glorious vision of the ancient rishis. And having given this wonderful vision of reality, the verse that comes next is a verse of praise, to praise that knowledge. Sarva karmanyapi sada sarva karmanyat kurvano madhyapashrayaha kurvano madhyapash matprasadaravapnoti matprasadaravap shashvatam paramavyayam shashvatam paramavyayam. Sarva karmani api sada kurvanaha mad vyapashrayaha. Kurvanaha, doing what? Sarva karmani, all actions, doing all your responsibilities, fulfilling all your responsibilities. Well, that describes all of you. You all fulfill your responsibilities, but as we've discussed here many times, it's not merely the performance of your responsibilities that counts, but the attitude with which you perform your responsibilities that is crucial. The mere performance of your, just to remember that statement, the mere performance of your duties does not make you a particularly spiritual person. In fact, it makes you a normal person, a normal good person. A normal good person is one who follows Dharma, one who fulfills all of his or her responsibilities. What distinguishes a person especially what distinguishes a spiritual aspirant is the attitude with which you fulfill all your responsibilities. So here, kurvanaha, doing, sarva karmani, all of one's actions, all of one's responsibilities, doing it how? Mad vyapashrayaha, one who, it literally means, with the one who has the attitude of taking me, mat is the pronoun here, me means Sri Krishna, one whose attitude is to take me as their refuge, is mat vyapashrayaha. So the person who has taken Sri Krishna as their refuge, that's the attitude. And then with that attitude, they carry out all their duties. And that attitude is there when? Is that attitude there at when they go into the temple or when they come to the ashram? No, it is there sada, always. One who continually carries out their responsibilities in life with this attitude. Now, this language is a little obscure. Madhvyapashrayaha. Shankara's commentary says, Mayi arpita sarvatma bhavaha. This is the attitude of the enlightened person, as we saw in a prior verse. The one who sees oneself as non-separate from Ishvara. That's the attitude. That's an extraordinary attitude. The one who sees himself or herself as being utterly non-separate from Ishvara and then continues to be engaged in fulfilling all of their responsibilities, what would that be like? To be enlightened in the midst of fulfilling your duties. Well, first of all, would there be any, if you're enlightened, would you have any resentment about having, oh, I have to do this again, I have more dishes to do, I have more work to do? So if you're enlightened, you feel full and complete and content. So first of all, there's no resentment, but much more than that. The attitude, being non-separate from Ishvara, engaged in your work. Try this. Engaged in your work, here are Ishvara's hands doing this work. Not my hands, Ishvara's hands. Or if you'll allow me to speak in first person. So there is a form, which is non-separate from Ishvara, sitting in this chair. And there's this mind, which is not always so bright, right? Today is a little dull, I think. So there's this mind, which is a manifestation of Ishvara, which is blessed by Ishvara to attempt to teach these teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. There's this mouth which goes on and on and on and on and on, talking, all of which, we could say, Ishvara's body, Ishvara's mind, Ishvara's mouth, Ishvara's teachings. This is a vision of the enlightened person, engaged in every action, seeing oneself as being non-separate from Ishvara. It's an effortless unfoldment of Ishvara's will. Ishvara's will, remember when I use that expression, you don't misunderstand me, right? We've had many discussions where we've said Ishvara's will is not like a human will, which is very fickle and very, very specific for human concerns. Ishvara's will is dharma. Dharma should unfold. Nature should unfold. And what should unfold in this particular situation is the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita should be unfolded. But what is the distinction for the enlightened person, though the enlightened person says, actually, as Sri Krishna said, I think back in chapter 4, na kinchit karomi iti. The enlightened person says, I didn't do anything. That's the vision of enlightenment. So the enlightened person would say, I'm not teaching. Yes, there's a body here. Yes, there's a mind here. Yes, there's a mouth that goes on making noises. But I don't teach. Why? It's all Ishvara. All Ishvara. Of course, it's equally true. Who's hearing these words is Ishvara also. Not only that Ishvara is sitting in this chair, but Ishvara is in this chair and that chair and the other chair. It's all Ishvara. This is the vision of the enlightened person. And this is what Shankara, as Shankara explains, Madhvyapashrayaha, literally it means one who has taken refuge in me, but Shankara explains, one who recognizes oneself to be non-separate from me. So that person, sarvakarmani kurvanaha, undertaking all of their responsibilities, having this attitude sada, always, matprasadat, due to my blessings, Sri Krishna says, due to my blessings, avapnoti, that person obtains. What does that person obtain? Padam avyayam. That person obtains the padam, the goal. What kind of goal? A goal which is shashvatam and avyayam. Shashvatam, the eternal goal. Avyayam, the unchanging, undecaying goal. That person gains a kind of contentment and peace that doesn't go up and down. Have you noticed that when, you know, everyone has contentment and peace, but it goes up and down? Like this, I don't know, like the stock market or other things, I suppose, they go up and down. Isn't that interesting? You get a stock in the news reports, they give you a report on the stock market. Wouldn't it be interesting to get a report on your contentment level? Today it's a little higher, today it's a little lower. But for most people, that's a reality. It goes up and down. Here, avapnoti, a person gains the padam, the goal, which is shashvatam, eternal, and avyayam, not subject to decay, not subject to change whatsoever. So this person gains perfect equanimity, perfect peace, perfect contentment. Why? Recognizing oneself to be non-separate from Ishvara. All of this, matprasadat, due to Ishvara's blessings, due to my blessings, Sri Krishna says. Sri Krishna can say it here because he's speaking as Ishvara. Ishvara we understand as karma pala data, as a giver of fruits of actions. Therefore, according to Ishvara's blessings, according to Ishvara as karma pala data, one becomes enlightened, one gains that perfect peace, perfect contentment, and then in the performance of action, that person sees it's all Ishvara. In the midst of every action, it is all Ishvara. This is that highest vision. So the prior verse describing that condition of enlightenment, this verse praising that condition of enlightenment. At this point, Arjuna is saying, that's pretty impressive. How can I get there? So now Sri Krishna has to take these teachings down to Arjuna's level, down to our level, and present these teachings in a way that's accessible. How does one gain that lofty knowledge? And that's what's described here in the next verse. Chetasa sarva karmani, chetasa sarva mai sanyasya matparaha, mai sanyasya mat buddhi yogamupashritya, buddhi yogamupash matchit. So how to get enlightened, how to get that parabhakti, how to get the other bhaktis we can understand, how to get lower forms of bhakti, how to get that highest form of bhakti, or better said, how to become enlightened. Well, we're in the 18th chapter. Don't you think this has all been taught by now? It has. So what we're seeing here, I mentioned before, what we're seeing here in the latter part of chapter 18 is a summary of some of the really, really important teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. And here, So we're already seeing a summary of some of Sri Krishna's teachings on bhakti. Now we're going to see a summary of some of the teachings on karma yoga. And certainly if there's any teaching that really stands out as dominant in the Bhagavad Gita, it's Sri Krishna's teachings of karma yoga. Let's see how he summarizes. How does Sri Krishna here summarize the teachings of karma yoga and present it as a means for gaining this highest knowledge? He says, Chetasa sarva karmani mai sanyasya matparaha. Matparaha. One who is focused on me. One who is devoted to me. Now, we're no longer talking about the enlightened person. We're talking about the sadhaka now. The enlightened person is automatically matparaha. Mat is a pronoun, me. Sri Krishna speaking here. An enlightened person is necessarily always focused on Ishvara because the enlightened person sees Ishvara everywhere, all the time, eyes open, eyes closed, looking in a mirror, looking at a disciple, looking at a cat, looking at a pile of garbage. Think of that. You know, it's pretty easy to see Ishvara if you're looking at a beautiful altar or if you're looking at a friend or a family member or someone. But suppose you're looking at, well, let's make it challenging. You know, pile of garbage is already challenging. Suppose you're looking at one of these Islamic, you're looking at a picture of an Islamic State terrorist who's chopping off the head of an innocent person. How disgusting is that? I mean, it's horrifying. It's terrible. To see Ishvara everywhere means to see Ishvara even there. Even there! And you might say, how can that be? If you wonder, how can Ishvara be present in the form of that terrorist severing an innocent person's head? Well, we said Ishvara is everything. Ishvara is nature. This is, by the way, this is a big topic. We'll give you just the very short form of this topic. Ishvara is everything, which means Ishvara is manifest in the form of nature. Now, I'm going to ask you a very tricky question. See if you get it right. It's a trick question. Is nature benevolent or not? Is nature a blessing or a curse? Is nature helping you or hurting you? And it's a trick question because nature includes both, right? So nature includes all the laws of nature that allows our bodies to be strong and vital. It's amazing, when you eat food, the process by which that food is broken down and you gain energy for your body, it's incredibly complicated. But our bodies effortlessly accomplish all of that. So we can say that nature blesses us. We breathe air, the air goes into our lungs. The oxygen gets into the bloodstream. It's really complicated stuff. So in this way, we can say nature is really blessing us with every breath we take. Nature blesses us. Well, suppose the next breath you take, you breathe in a virus. And that virus gets into your body and multiplies. And then in 2 days, you can't get out of bed. It's the same nature that makes oxygen go into your bloodstream is the same nature that makes you get sick from a tiny virus particle. So now going back to the trick question, is nature benevolent or inimical to our welfare? You could say both or neither. So nature is what it is. Nature includes wonderful things. Nature includes viruses. Nature includes bacteria for which there's no treatment. Remember when all these sad people were dying in Africa, that Ebola? Horrible death they died. Both are nature. Well, if nature includes this oxygen, which nourishes us, and virus and bacteria, which kill us, how about in human form? There are some human beings who nurture us, who help us. There are some human beings who are the equivalent of virus and bacteria who hurt us and kill us. If you can say that oxygen is natural and bacteria are natural, can't we say good people are natural and terrorists are natural? We have to say. By the way, this doesn't mean this is no excuse. That's not our point, right? We're merely saying it's natural. We still have a responsibility to deal with all of this. When there's a virus that goes around, we have a responsibility to find modes of treatment for that virus. If there's a terrorist around, we have a responsibility to deal with that terrorism. So don't mistake this. This is not an argument for passivity of any kind. It's not mere acceptance we're after. It's understanding we're after. What are we trying to understand? Oxygen is natural. Bacteria are natural. Good people are natural. Terrorists are natural. It's just the way the world is. You say, we don't like it. No. Who likes bacteria and viruses? No one wants to be sick. Who wants a world with terrorists? Which is why we have the responsibility to find treatments for the viruses and to find appropriate ways of dealing with the problem of terrorism. Okay, the point is, both are natural. And why did we go off on this? This is quite a little bit of a detour today. Why are we on this detour? We've said the enlightened person is one who can see even in that terrorist, one who could see Ishvara. I'm not making this up. I'm sure you appreciate it. Go. Where is that? Here we go. Where we started our discussion today. So, what is the third line? Samaha sarvabhuteshu. Sarvabhuteshu, in all beings. The one who sees what is samaha, the same. The same in all beings means the same in oxygen and the same in bacteria, the same in a saint and the same in a terrorist. So this is the vision of the enlightened person. Now, what's being taught here is how to gain that knowledge. How to gain that knowledge? Chetasa sarvakarmani mai sanya'a matparaha. So that whole discussion was on matparaha. So matparaha is at two levels. One is the enlightened person's level. The person who sees necessarily all of this is non-separate from Ishvara. But now suppose we step down a level. Because Arjuna is not yet enlightened, we presume, we don't know. At a lower level, then, what does it mean to be matparaha, to be fixed on Ishvara, to be focused on Ishvara, to be focused on Ishvara as a sadhaka, as a spiritual aspirant, which means as a matter of spiritual practice, to be focused on Ishvara. What does that mean, to be focused on Ishvara as a matter of spiritual practice? And that's what Sri Krishna is teaching in this verse. How to be focused on Ishvara in the midst of life, in the midst of your work, when you're at work, when you're at home, when you're driving your car, how to be focused on Ishvara in all those situations? Well, that's what he's teaching here. Chetasa sarvakarmani mayi sanyasya. So matparaha here means the spiritual seeker who is trying to be focused on Ishvara, that spiritual seeker who, sarva karmani, all actions, sanyasya, renouncing. renouncing all actions. Now, renouncing all actions, the first thing that comes to mind is orange bedsheets, right? The life of a sannyasi, the life of a renunciate monk. But that's clearly not what Sri Krishna is teaching this to whom? To Arjuna and to all of us. So this is not just this is not a teaching meant for sannyasis. This is a teaching meant for everyone. So mayi sannyasya, renouncing unto me sarva karmani, all actions, renouncing how? Chetasa, with your mind. With one's mind renouncing. This is not a physical renunciation. This is an attitude of renunciation. And by way of summary, this is the main subject matter of chapters 4 and 5. Chapter 4, Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga, and chapter 5, Sannyasa Yoga. But if you remember back in chapter 5, Sannyasa Yoga wasn't really talking about sannyasa as a lifestyle at all. It was talking about sannyasa. Sannyasa means renunciation. It was talking about sannyasa as an attitude. And that is the attitude that Sri Krishna is summarizing here. Mayi sannyasya, renouncing unto me, sarva karmani, all actions, chetasa, with your mind. It's an attitude. It's an attitude of mental renunciation of actions unto Sri Krishna. What is that attitude? In fact, it's the attitude of karma yoga. I'm smiling here because we keep coming to this again and again and again. Karma yoga. In fact, remember several classes ago, I gave you three primary aspects of karma yoga, and you'll find that all three of these aspects of karma yoga are all aspects of renunciation. Let's see those three aspects. One was the aspect of looking at Ishvara as karma pala data. Ishvara is the giver of the fruits of action. That's one aspect of karma yoga. There's also mental renunciation involved in that. How is that an act of, how is looking at Ishvara as karma pala data, how is that renunciation? It means to recognize I control my behavior, I renounce any expectation that I can produce a particular result. This is a little subtle, but I think you're with me. Usually when we do an act, when we engage in actions, we think of ourselves as the effective, independent agents. I'm going to do this. Watch me, I'm going to do this. In that statement, watch me, I'm going to do this, we're forgetting the fact that we cannot guarantee the result of our actions. We can only choose our actions. We cannot guarantee the result. Why? We have no direct control over the result. Why? Ishvara is karma pala data. We are the karma karta. We do the action. Ishvara is pala data, the giver of the fruits of actions. So when we renounce this notion that we are completely in control of our lives, we are completely in control of every situation, when we renounce that ignorance-based perspective, when we acknowledge Ishvara's hand present in all activities, this is karma yoga. But do you see how that involves an attitude of renunciation? To renounce the sense that I am swatantra. Swatantra means I am an independent agent fully capable of accomplishing anything I choose to do. To renounce that attitude is an important part of karma yoga. Then we said another aspect of karma yoga was to recognize Ishvara as the one who gives us the ability or skill or resources to accomplish whatever we accomplish. Again, if we ignore the blessings we've receive from Ishvara, we begin to see ourselves as Swatantra, as these independent agents capable of doing anything and everything. We renounce that. And we acknowledge that whatever we accomplish in life, we accomplish with Ishvara's blessings. Another important aspect of Karma Yoga. And anyway, there's I think enough said here. Otherwise, we'll lose our way here. So this is really a reference to the teachings back in chapters 4 and 5. Chetasa, with one's mind, sarva karmani, all of one's actions, mayi sanyasya, renouncing them unto Ishvara. Like what I said before, this physical body is given by Ishvara. This mind is given by Ishvara. These teachings are given by Ishvara. What role does Swami Tadatmananda have in any of this? I don't see at all. This is the attitude Sri Krishna is describing here. This is what it means to renounce all actions unto Ishvara, is to acknowledge all actions are done in and through Ishvara, with Ishvara's blessings. So having done this, buddhi yogam upashritya, upashritya, taking refuge in what? Buddhi yogam. Buddhi yoga is one of the terms used for karma yoga. Because why does buddhi means intellect? Why does buddhi yoga mean karma yoga? What you do with your hands is not karma yoga. Sweeping the floor. Remember, I gave that. Some of you will remember this. Sweeping the floor of the ashram is karma yoga. Sweeping your own floor is not. But that suggests that the act of sweeping is somehow essential and where you're sweeping is somehow essential in karma yoga. Ridiculous. What makes it karma yoga is your attitude, not where you're sweeping. It's your attitude. So buddhi yoga, the yoga of the mind, the yoga of the intellect. How about this? Yoga of attitude. Buddhi yoga, paraphrase, the yoga of attitude, the spiritual practice of having this particular attitude while you're engaged in whatever kinds of actions. What is that attitude? It's all Ishvara. It's not me. It's all Ishvara's blessings. So with that attitude, machittaha satatam bhava. And here is Sri Krishna's instruction. He tells Arjuna, Machittaha bhava. Arjuna, you should be what? Machittaha, one whose mind is focused on me. You should focus your mind on me. Satatam, continually. To focus your mind on me continually means, well, right now, suppose you're sitting here and teaching. Let's put it in your terms. Suppose you have this attitude, and I think many of you do. So you're listening to this class. You can appreciate that the one sitting in your seat, the fact that that one is still alive, is a blessing of Ishvara. The fact that the body is filled with prana, filled with life, is a gift of Ishvara. The fact that you have a mind that's able to understand this Bhagavad Gita, that is a blessing of Ishvara. So if you appreciate this right now as you're listening, by the way, to listen is a kind of a karma, right? You are performing a manasa karma, a mental activity. So suppose in the performance of this manasa karma that you're doing right now, listening to this Bhagavad Gita class, suppose you reflect. This is all Ishvara. Ishvara is teaching. Ishvara is listening. It's all Ishvara. Ishvara is blessing you to be able to understand these teachings. Suppose you get it now. But then you get into your car, and as you're driving home, is Ishvara driving? Or maybe that attitude goes away? And that's the issue. So here, the instruction to Arjuna is satatam, always, machittaha bhava, always have your mind focused on me, which means to sustain this attitude in all situations and places while you're engaged in all actions. And the bottom line is this. And first of all, very clearly, this is a recap of some of the teachings of Karma Yoga and Sannyasa that were the focal point of chapters 3, 4, and 5, especially in 4 and 5. If you remember the underlying principle of that, the underlying principle was this: to gain enlightenment is an extraordinary achievement in life. Extraordinary achievements in life will not be gained with ordinary effort. Correct? An extraordinary achievement can never be gained with an ordinary effort. And we've learned throughout our lives that for a small goal, you require a small effort. For a big goal, you require a big effort. And for an extraordinary goal, which is enlightenment, what kind of effort is required? Extraordinary effort. Now, extraordinary effort consists of what? How about an extraordinary effort 2 hours a day? First of all, an extraordinary effort, how about 3 hours on Saturday mornings? That's good, but no one would say that's extraordinary. So suppose we say, in addition to several hours on Saturday morning, suppose you have an hour of prayer and meditation and study at home, an hour a day. Good. Excellent. Is it extraordinary? No. 2 hours a day. Better. Is it extraordinary? No. 6 hours a day. 10 hours a day. 12 hours, now you think, oh, Swamiji, we got a life to live. How is it possible? What is this verse teaching us? This verse is teaching us how it's possible. How is it possible? Machittaha satatam bhava. To always keep your mind focused on Ishvara. Which means, when you're driving your car, to carry this attitude with you. Having a car is a blessing. Not everyone has a car. So if you got a car, Ishvara's blessing. If you know how to drive a car, Ishvara's blessings. If you manage to get home without anyone smashing into your bumper, Ishvara's blessings. And then when you're home, cooking lunch, Ishvara's blessings. When you're doing whatever you do in the afternoon, in the evening, tomorrow, every day, every moment, going to work with your friends, with your family, satatam, always. Machittaha bhava, always have your mind focused on Ishvara. You might think that sounds very much like bhakti, but it's having your mind fixed on Ishvara in the context of doing your duties, in the context of living your life. It's so easy to be machittaha, to have your mind focused on Ishvara, pretty easy if you're standing in front of an altar. How easy is it in front of your computer? Not so easy, although I know some of you have these really nice screensavers. You see a picture of Bhagavan. Yeah, it's nice. And really, it's nice, but it's still not quite satatam unless we make that effort. So this is the, I hate to use the word magic, the magic of Karma Yoga, which means the amazing capacity of Karma Yoga, these teachings, the amazing capacity to convert your life, your ordinary life, to convert your ordinary life into full-time spiritual practice. That's exactly what he's teaching. That's exactly what karma yoga is about. In Sri Krishna's teachings, karma yoga is not separate from bhakti. They're not two different things at all. Karma yoga is bhakti. Bhakti, while you're engaged in action, is karma yoga. And that is the key to live a life of full-time spiritual practice, and that is the extraordinary level of effort that's required for the extraordinary goal, which is this, to discover that you are utterly non-separate from Ishvara. And that leads to our homework assignment. Your homework assignment is to reflect, how often do you think of Ishvara? How often? In an ordinary day. So you can kind of keep track of your activities. Just observe. How often do you think of Ishvara? And you might even come up with some tricks. I'll just share with you very, very quickly here. When I was young and still working a full-time job, I came up with a lot of tricks to think about Ishvara more. One is, this was back in the 1970s, and these digital watches were brand new then. So I got one of these watches, and I turned it on to make it beep every hour. Why? Not that I needed to know every hour, but that beep would remind me to think of Ishvara. At least, so I knew at least once an hour, that beep would remind me to think of Ishvara. Another practice I had when I was in my working days is every time the phone rang, before picking it up, that was my key. Actually, it's a bell, right? The phone ringing. Back in those days, they actually had bells. Do you remember when phones actually had bells inside of them? So there was a bing, ding, 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 ding. So any time there was a bell ringing, it would remind me to think of Ishvara. And you can think of how you can implement some of these practices in your life. How often in a normal day do you think of Ishvara? And what could you do to think of Ishvara more often? And you might come up with your own list of simple little tricks. These tricks work. These tricks help. So that's why I said before, if you have a screensaver on your computer. So you could either have the Windows logo or you can have something more devotional in nature. Why not? I know some at work you have to use your own judgment. It may or may not be appropriate at work. Certainly at home you could. Anyway, this is your homework. How often do you think of Ishvara? How much more often could you think of Ishvara? What tricks could you implement to think of Ishvara more often in a typical day? Okay. A couple of important announcements. Not so important. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our satsang at 6:15 p.m. If the weather is nice, we'll sit outside. And it's been quite nice to do so. And most important announcement is, as you all know, that next Saturday we're celebrating our 15th anniversary. I know you're all planning on coming. The program will begin at 10 a.m. next Saturday, and we'll begin with some puja and homa, not too long. And then after that is complete, then we'll gather here for the main program. We have several special guests, and I have something nice to share with you. So I'm looking forward to that. And of course, we have some nice food that's being catered, and pray for good weather. We'll have a nice picnic lunch outside. That is all next Saturday. So please come for our anniversary. Bring your friends. Bring family. So it's a nice opportunity for them to come and be introduced to what's going on here. Along with the anniversary, we have some preparation to do for the anniversary. Not too much, it turns out. If what we have done in past years, and we'll do again, is we'll meet at 6 p.m. on Friday evening. So those of you who are free, please come here, on Friday evening at 6 o'clock, and in less than 1 hour, everything will be done. We have to put the chairs out and all things like that. Not too much work, especially if a lot of you come, then it'll get done very quickly. So please come and help at 6 p.m. this coming Friday. For today, two things to mention. One is there's a small gardening project to be done. If some of you would like to help with that gardening, just to clean up the entryway, you can meet in front of the lobby after the class is over. Also, a request. We have a contractor coming who's going to be doing some work on our parking lot. After you're done with the class and a gardening project, please be sure there are no cars left in the parking lot. I think sometimes you go to somebody's house and you leave your car here, which ordinarily is fine. It's not a problem. But today we need a clear parking lot for the contractor to do the work. So please help with that. Library will be open after class. And I look forward to seeing you all next Saturday for our anniversary. We'll conclude with our prayers.